One of my favorite bands of all time, Moondua, are in the studio. Welcome back to New Zealand.
Thank you.
Great to be here.
Ripley and Sanai.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well done. Very well done.
Now you guys are hitting these shores on the back of a big-ish Australian tour. How was Australia?
It was great.
Yeah, Australia was great.
Really fun shows,
and we didn't see anything on fire, which is great. Mm. There was lots of rain, which is good news, I think, for everything. And
that shit's been real heavy.
Yeah, it was pretty heavy going there. We didn't know what to expect and stuff, but it was really cool.
This time you guys are touring with a huge light show or a big projection box, which is designed by a guy called Emmanuel Baird. Is that right?
Mm. Yeah.
How did that come to fruition, and what is it? And who is this guy?
Man of mystery.
He likes to stay in the shadows, actually. Yeah.
But we've been working with him for a couple of years. He's the visual artist based in Manchester. And we decided with this new record that we wanted to do a new show. So we did a residency together in Manchester back in April of last year to develop this different concept of a stage thing.
Did it kind of have anything to do with the shift in direction for Moondua, like the stage show and sort of the disco influence on the new record?
Yeah, well, it was done in conjunction with that. So we wanted to take the light show to the next level.
Yeah.
And when we first started working with him, he, you know, brought some ideas and just sort of jumped in with us. And he'd never worked with a rock band, really, like not doing tours. Anyway, so it was a new experience for him. He usually does electronic acts, you know, people who, they just have a laptop.
They need a big show
and they play these big festivals and stuff. So
It kind of feels like a natural progression. I think last time you guys played, you whited out the whole whammy bar and you all wore white and it was projections onto you. So it kind of feels like, where else do you go from there? And it looks like you found a place.
That's right.
Yeah.
We're worried about what's next. Yeah. But yeah, he designed it so it could be portable also. But we travel with this huge rig.
Feat of engineering.
How many people, like, is there somebody like controlling the lights and all the rest of it? Or what's this?
He does all of that.
Is he along with you?
Yeah, he's playing to the show. So he plays a live set with us every night.
Right, okay.
Does he play a different set? Do you get a different light show?
Whatever he's feeling?
He'll change it up sometimes. He'll get in grooves with things and he'll have certain vibes that he likes for different songs.
Wow, cool.
But a lot of it is improvisational.
Feels fluid. Yeah, yeah, right. Okay.
Do you feel like it changes the response of the audience, having a big light show?
No eye contact's good, eh?
I like playing inside a box. What's cool is that we're inside, surrounded by screens, and it's a different experience for us because it's sort of a 4D experience for the audience because it goes beyond the box into the room, but we're contained in the box and we're seeing the projections from the inside, which is a trip for us. And it, for me, it helps me zone out a lot, which is good for me. But I think, I think the audience, there's less, you're not right there with them. So the reaction is slightly different, I think. Not that they don't like it as much, but it's, you know, you're not looking someone in the eye as much. So.
Does it change the intensity for you inside the box?
You slip into the groove a bit easier.
I think so. I find like being in the box, it's, you know, we don't necessarily see the audience quite as well. It's kind of like everyone's enveloped in mist and they might not see us quite as well.
It? Can someone tell me if they're digging it?
Yeah,
but it's like, at the same time, it's, in some ways, it's more of a shared experience because we're experiencing the visuals as well, just from a different perspective. So it's like, it turns into this encompassing space that includes us rather than like us being on stage and the audience being separate. It's like we're all in this thing kind of together, which is cool.
Yeah, the front projections that we were doing before, we had no idea what it looked like because we're just seeing light shining in our eyes. So this, we're, like Sanai said, we're feeling it. This is more of the same thing.
The new record has sort of got a disco focus, as I've sort of read in a whole bunch of press. What was the attraction to a disco groove for Moon Duo?
We kind of got to a point with the previous records, the Occult Architecture records, where we felt like we'd finished something. And I think for us, disco was appealing because when disco first came around, it was a very hopeful space, like not just the music, but the place of a disco was a place of community, a place of self-expression, a place of real freedom and enrichment, like mutual enrichment. And with the times that we're living in currently, I think there was a really deep appeal in that scene and in that movement. So that was sort of where we began with the idea of disco, of like doing our version of disco.
Nice. Should we play one off the new record and then maybe come back and have a little bit of a chat after that?
Sure.
Great.
Moon Duo performing at the Hollywood Avondale tomorrow night. Here's a little taster. Stick around, we'll be back after this for a bit more of a chat.
That was Moon Duo with Lost Heads. How many times have you guys had to sit through your own songs at radio stations?
A few times. It's worse when someone's DJing a show and they play your stuff.
Okay, note.
Like, right before or right after.
Okay,
like,
note. John, please do it.
Oh, we're DJing.
You guys can do that tomorrow.
Yeah, we're DJing. So now Moon Duo.
Good to know.
What, wooden ships?
That happens a lot.
That's actually,
that does happen.
You guys are, well... Wooden Ships did the 7-inch with a cover of Snapper, covered Buddy.
Yes.
Tell us about your interest in Snapper. How did you know about Snapper?
I don't know. I don't remember. That was so long ago. But I just loved that song in particular.
Oh, it's so good, man. So good.
And back then, and we did this when we made a special 7-inch when we came down to Australia the first time.
Yeah.
And we did a Scientist cover on one side. And back then, I think when we were doing more stuff ourselves, it was just easier to like, let's just record a couple songs really quickly and make a 7-inch for the tour, which we do less of now for some reason. But we just thought we're coming down this way. Let's do something special.
Is there any sort of process that an artist needs to go through for like rights? You know, because Moon Duo put out the Jukebox Babe and No Fun release. Did you have to like haggle, or, you know, is a bit of horse trading going on to be able to do stuff like that?
The label takes care of that. Technically, last time I dealt with it doing something like that was probably the Snapper thing or when we did the Scientist thing. There's a company called the Harry Fox Agency, and if you go on there, they handle like almost all of the rights for covering a song and then making it.
Oh wow.
And you can get permission through them for almost everything. I think we had trouble with the Neil Young, Wooden Ships did a Neil Young thing. It was like, Neil was like, I'm not working with them. You got to contact my secretary or something.
It's such a great cover. It's such a good cover.
Oh, the Vampire Blues?
Yeah.
But so,
damn, I thought it was Solitary, man.
So we wrote to them and yeah, I don't know. I don't think you have to really do it under a certain amount.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if anyone would actually care. That usually people are happy if you cover their song because then they get the royalties.
Also, if Neil complains, that's great publicity.
Yeah. I think the only thing that happens, you get a cease and desist, maybe. But generally, people don't mind if you cover a song because you just need the songwriter permission. That's what you need.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you knock it out of the park. You know, they're like, come on. That's awesome. So tell us a little bit about this split release you did with Alan Vega and the Stooges cover. Obviously big fans of both those acts.
So that came about, so for Iggy's 70th birthday, I think he has a radio show on BBC Six. And we've been on BBC Six a bunch, and they asked us if we wanted to do a song for, we were going in for a session, they're like, do you want to play an Iggy song for his birthday? And we were like, great. So we worked up No Fun really quickly, I think, during sound checks.
Yeah, in like a couple rehearsals.
And then that was really fun. And then our our sound engineer kept singing Jukebox Babe, the Alan Vega song,
yeah,
over and over constantly again throughout this one tour, and he just walked in like, Jukebox Babe, Jukebox Babe, Jukebox Babe. So we had this idea, well, we've worked up the no fun thing, and let's, you know, it'd be fun to do a 12-inch, because we're going to Portugal, and we wanted to try to do something with Pete Kember, Sonic Boom from Spaceman 3.
Oh, yeah.
He's done some remixes of some of your stuff in the past, hasn't he?
Yeah, and he actually, it ended up kind of opening a good door, because we had a great session with him doing the 12-inch, and then we ended up mixing the new record with him as well, mm-hmm, in Portugal. Which was an equally great experience.
So. Yeah, so we went down and we recorded the two songs for the 12-inch with him. And he was like, this feels like a tryout. Is this, are you like testing me or something? We're like, maybe. I guess we are. But we worked really well with him, so.
Yeah, he's awesome.
What was he like as a producer?
Awesome.
He's super. I mean, do you have any interesting stories about him? And I mean, did he tell you tales about Spaceman 3 and that sort of thing?
Oh yeah,
he's got some good stories. But he's fun to work with because he's really unusual. He's like really eccentric and creative. So he'll come at things from a completely, from an angle that you would just never think of on your own. And it's such a welcome presence because he's so. There's like a lot of joy in his relationship with music, and he's just like really into it. He'll get so excited about something and like try all these ideas, but he's also really generous, like with other artists.
He's into all kinds of things.
Yeah, he's into, his tastes are so broad.
He's not like too cool for school. Yeah. You know, he's like, oh, this reminds me of such and such, and he'll pull out a record that you've never heard of. And,
yeah.
But he... Yeah, and he brought in like all these vintage synths that he'd been collecting forever, mm-hmm, and
toys.
Yeah, he's like
noise toys.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this like an egg shaker. He's like, this is the egg shaker that we used on the first Spaceman 3 record. I was like, oh, that's cool.
That's pretty cool.
I didn't know they had egg shaker.
You go back and listening, maybe it's on the snare. I don't know. Yeah.
But he also had this amazing toy that I actually had when I was a small child. It's this like big plastic apple with bells inside of it, and like a happy face on it.
Yeah, he's a fun guy.
What's on the cards for the show tomorrow night at Hollywood? What kind of set are you guys playing?
Lots of stuff from the new record, mixed in with some of our groovier songs from the older records.
Yeah, okay. It's a mix.
Perfect.
I mean, Mundo has always been pretty groove orientated. What's the difference between like a disco groove and an occult groove? Is there any difference?
That's a good question.
I think the motoric thing was something that, you know, the more straightforward kind of motoric thing was something that we had been worked with for a long time. And so we were, for this record, we were just exploring different kinds of beats. Mm-hmm. And stuff, and throwing him at our drummer and saying, you know, work with this. And the way we did it this time was we sort of worked as if we had two drummers, like the Allman Brothers Band. Mm-hmm. One was a machine and one was John. And that's how we do it live. So we don't use backing tracks ever or anything like that. But we do have for this tour and this album, he actually plays with a drum machine.
Oh, wow.
So it's like two drummers.
That could be really hard for him.
He's an amazing drummer.
Has everyone got in-ears and stuff with your stuff?
John does.
Just for the drums.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
So that you can hear that.
I guess everyone can hear him, so.
Yeah.
You're spot on. Yeah.
I guess he's been playing with you for quite a while now. Has it been a fantastic addition having a live drummer?
Oh, yeah. We met him in the summer of 2013, and we were just looking for a drummer for a Europe tour. And he was based in Berlin at the time, but he's Canadian. But it ended up just working really well. We had great chemistry with him, and he's been with us ever since.
How about the sound? Because you kind of have to, I guess when you guys transition from a machine to a drummer, if you're playing those songs, is it important to like have a certain snare and all the rest of it? Or what's the vibe there? Would you just leave it to him and it sounded right? So.
When we first started working with him?
Yeah, because you guys kind of were drum machine orientated, and then you switched over to, I'm not saying I don't know if he was the first drummer, but you know what I mean? That seemed like it'd be quite a hard sort of...
Well, a lot of our early stuff, what we did, our recording techniques are like, we have no idea what we're doing. I mean, we do now somewhat, but when we started, we had no idea what we're doing. We bought a sampler and it had a record, you know, function. So I literally went, used Omar from Wooden Ships, his drum kit, and I just held a mic up to the snare and just went bap.
Oh, okay.
And that was the sound of the snare. And then the same with all the drums, and then just built the beats out of those.
Ah, so it's like a drum machine, but it was sampled.
Sampled from Omar's drum kit in a really bad lo-fi way.
Yeah.
So it had kind of a blown out acoustic sound, sort of. So, but when we first worked with John, he was really, he's just a really dedicated artist. So he practices all the time, and he learned every beat for all the songs that we were going to do, like exactly the way the drum machine was.
Mm-hmm.
And we overdub all kinds of percussion. And so he was like, we first played with him.
He was trying to catch up.
He's got a tambourine in one hand, shaker and a stick in the other.
He's like an octopus.
He's playing the beat and he's doing the shaker. And he's just like, we're like, this guy's awesome.
Who is this guy?
So yeah, he just had it. Like he just nailed it.
Perfect. Yeah.
Amazing. Sounds like it's going to be an epic live show tomorrow. At the Hollywood Avondale. I think there's a couple of tickets left. You can find them. Go, head to Under the Radar.
It's a beaut venue. Have you guys checked it out yet?
No, we've heard about it.
That's beautiful.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's a good choice. Great choice for a venue to play.
Yeah, we can't wait.
Hmm. Could we get a voice ID out of you guys?
Sure.
Yeah.
That's a radio station.
Great. Everyone always says that to us, like, and we kind of know what to do. Right?
Is it 95 FM?
Or should we, wait, hang on. Shall we? We can give you a point of reference from last time you were here. This.
Here
we go. You ready?
Hey, this is Sinai from Moon Duo, and you're listening to 95 BFM.
Something. I mean, you can have fun with it. You can say what you want.
That sounds good. Right. You want to start?
Sure. Hi, this is Moon Duo.
And you're listening to 95B FM.
Mint.
Pretty great.
Thank you very much.
Hey, we'll see you guys tomorrow. I'm really looking forward to it. It's going to be wild.
Thanks, guys.
So are we. Thanks. Yo.